It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live! Welcome to the show on a May 2-4 holiday edition. We are both relaxed. We're in vacay mode, but we have been locked in on all the amazing sports this weekend, and we have lots to discuss, including Justin Thomas from the clouds to win the PGA Championship. The Battle of Alberta has not disappointed. Golden State Warriors are turning back the clock in the NBA Conference Finals. The Blue Jays keep their heads above water, and some news and notes in the football world. But Mike, how was your long weekend?
Well, like typical fashion here in Ontario, the May 2-4 weekend usually gives you one good day of weather. May have got two out of it. I don't know. Some bad storms rolled in Saturday, but, didn't get up to much. Did some yard work, made the lawn look good, and just kind of took it easy for the most part. How about you?
Yeah, well, May 2-4 for us is usually cottage weekend. It's like that first one, you get up there, you open it up, you get the docks in the water, get the boat out, the water's still too cold to swim, but you're right, it's like hit or miss, usually the weather's bad up there. I remember back in the day, like high school days, you'd go up to Wasaga Beach and everyone would have their Honda Civics ripping around, you know, all the cool bros up there trying to act like they were right from the Backstreet Boys or something like that. But those days are long past now with kids. And with my boys now heavy into their sports, we couldn't go up north. So we were stuck around here locally for May 2-4, but it was great. We did baseball. We did hockey. We went to the golf course. So a little bit of everything but swimming, really. It was a sports-filled weekend, and was even able to find some time to sit my rear down on the couch and watch all the golf, like every single shot. I loved it.
You're still on delay though yesterday.
I was still a little bit on delayed because I was at the rink and it took me a little bit of time to get caught up, but it was well worth the wait, and we'll get into that for sure.
Yeah, every time major champion, I felt like the Masters you were on time, but
Masters I try to be. Yeah,
I always have to preface, like, are you watching it? Where are you right now? I don't want to be that guy. So, but it was well worth it yesterday.
Yep. It was great. We went to a party, first kind of like barbecue party, I should say, with kids and everything on Saturday. So that I was recording the golf on the Saturday to watch when I got back. But I got in this weird situation now where I'm essentially golf guy. And I mean that in, we were going to a barbecue. I'm not the greatest dresser in the world, Mike. I'm like a, you know, I'm a hoodie and a hat type of guy, but it was warm out. It was warm out, right? So I was wore shorts and I put a golf shirt on, right? And everyone at the little gathering, the barbecue, was like, hey, did you golf this morning? Or, hey, Stark, are you going golfing later tonight? I'm like, no, this is what I dress like. I dress like a golfer all the time. I'm golfer guy.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Back in my office days, you know, come June, July, August, I don't like wearing, you know, dress shirts and all that. So I would typically wear golf shirt and golf pants. And people would say, oh, are you teeing off today? What time are you playing? I'm like, hey, you dress for the job you want. I just want to golf, man. So I know what you're saying.
The only thing I was missing was my golf glove in my back pocket and the range finder in my front pocket. And then I'd be like, no, I'm not golfing. Why would you even think I was golfing?
Yeah.
But I did get out. I played kind of in some wet conditions Sunday morning. Our season-long tournament amongst friends started Sunday morning, so had to bring the A game. It was okay. Two blow-up holes, two triples, man. I mean, you know, when you get home after golf and you think about it and you're like, oh, if I just took my medicine, chipped it out over here, I would have bogeyed, right? If I bogeyed both those four strokes off of what I shot, I was an 85, so that would have been an 81. You know, you're just kicking yourself. But I'm making a rule right now, and I want anyone who's listening who ever golfs with me to remind me this. On par fives, I don't care how good I drive the ball. Side note, I've been driving the ball great. But I don't care how good it is and how straight down that fairway it is. I want a nice 7-iron layup to about 100 or 75 yards. No more 3 woods going for the green and 2. Because the percentage of it working is 0.0. Never happens.
Well, to touch on your first point about what you think about after a round, typically my first thought is, do I want to have a beer before or after I shower? That's my main focus. And then I'll think about the
shower,
round.
Mike. Or in beer in the shower.
I've done that before. Yeah, you got to play smart sometimes, especially in the weather. You know, if you in the rain, when it's a little wet, the ball will hold up more. Maybe just lay up and give yourself a more, you know, friendly shot. But on the flip side, if the greens are wet, maybe something will stick. You never know. So you gotta play the percentages.
My three wood from 225 is not sticking tight. I don't know why I think I can do that shot. It never works out.
That's because you tape delay the golf. You gotta start watching on time and it'll turn around.
I'll change for you, Mike. Don't worry about it. But hey, we're going to talk about the golf coming up, and we got lots of other topics. It was a busy week in sports, and Mike and I are just getting started. So stick around right after this. Nothing is better and more intense than major golf events, and that will be our T1. Justin Thomas came back from down 7 strokes to sneak into a playoff with Will Zalatoris for the PGA Championship. After 3 holes, JT captured his 2nd major and 2nd Wanamaker trophy. Mike, will this tournament be remembered for Thomas's comeback or the leaderboard falling apart?
I think Thomas's comeback is the far significant story here, especially being 7 back heading into Sunday. And, you know, not an afterthought, but certainly somebody that wasn't really in the conversation going into the final round. And we talked last week about the PGA kind of being that 4th on the power ranking scale, right, if you will, of the majors. But I tell you what, man, a good tournament throughout the 4 days. The weather played a big factor on Saturday. Cooler temperatures, windy, just looked miserable out there for a lot of guys. And then Sunday, things cleared up a bit. And I tell you what, that final round was awesome. Kind of felt for Mito, you know, Pereira, an unknown for most people. Admittedly, I didn't know a ton about him until the weekend, and you read up on these guys. But just felt like he was either going to do one of two things, what he did, or he was going to kind of stay the course and just get the job done. But in fairness to him, it just seemed like a lot of guys who kind of put themselves on the leaderboard, Will Zalatoris included, a couple others, Cam Young was up there for a while, all of them started slipping as the day went on. And it was just kind of like, who's going to hang on here? You know, Thomas goes out, shoots his 67, is the clubhouse leader, if you will. And it just kind of all fell into place for him.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, so you wake up Sunday and you look at the leaderboard and you're like, huh, none of these guys really interest me. Majority of people that did any sort of, you know, pre-tournament betting didn't pick any of these guys.
No.
Maybe Zalatoris. But the rest of them, you know, completely kind of no-namers when it comes to majors. Those big names hadn't risen to the top yet. So it was one of those situations like, is this going to be just, you know, Mito just running away with it here, win by 4 or 5 strokes, never see him again in another major. The PGA tends to have these kind of one-and-done major winners sometimes. And is that just going to be another case of situation? But things started to change as Thomas got to that back nine and he started really turning it on and getting some of those birdies. Same with McIlroy. If we look at him, he was going pretty good there. And I thought maybe between Thomas and McIlroy, maybe it'd be Rory that would get up there and post that number into the clubhouse and be the first one in there as a leader. But he fell off a couple bogeys, and Thomas kept trucking along. And I even wrote it down in some notes while I was watching. When Thomas was on the 11th or 12th hole, he made that long birdie putt, and he was kind of laughing at his caddy, Bones McKay, saying, go pick up that ball. It was an unbelievable putt. And I think at the time, and I wrote it down, was, man, Thomas is really going to be kicking himself about struggling on Saturday, because maybe he could have got into the situation, or sorry, got into the conversation a little bit better if he had a better Saturday, because he was kind of not anywhere even on the little leaderboard in the bottom right corner at that point. But man, things really started to change. And for me, it really changed when Zalatoris hit that ball into kind of an unplayable past the green, past the cart path into the bush. It was a 15-minute wait while he tried to get a ruling on where he was going to drop. He ended up having to drop it on the cart path. And that kind of threw everything into the blender of, hey, let's remember, this is a major. There's a lot of pressure, and these guys have not been there before. Someone's going to crumble. And Mito had to sit there and wait 15 minutes while Zalatoris was on the cart path. Mito and his group, they were on the tee just waiting. So there was a lot of time to start thinking about what was going to go wrong, and sure enough, a lot of it went wrong.
The thing I was thinking when that was happening was, I can't begin to imagine hitting off a cart path and potentially damaging your club. I know for these guys, look,
they don't care.
They'll have a new one next week. For us, that's a few hundred dollars. so I was like, you know what? He's going to obviously hit off of it. That's the way it was. But even trying to place on the cart path, it kept rolling. And then finally they got it to a place, I guess, that worked. But yeah, that kind of seemed to start the show, so to speak.
Yeah, and Pereira, you feel for him. It looked like he was in control. They had his buddy Neiman on the call for a couple holes there. It was almost went too long where he was praising him and praising him and praising him. I was like, hey, this guy's got like six or seven holes left. He misses a putt on 17 by like less than an inch. It's hanging on the hole. And I remember thinking, if he makes this putt, he's going to win. He'll be two shots up going into the last hole. No way he's going to double bogey. And now looking back, and if that putt drops, maybe it changes his mind frame where he's like, hey, I just know I need to bogey. Maybe I can just take an iron or a three wood down the middle on 18. But he takes the weirdest driver swing on 18.
Yeah.
Like it looked like a 20 handicap at your Muni on a Sunday afternoon. He swipes through it. That ball was going right for the water. And the troubling part is, he needs to drop where it enters, and where he drops, there's trees still there.
Yeah.
So he's got to hit a cut shot around. I knew he was just crumbling then. I knew at that point Thomas and Zalatoris were at least going to be in some sort of playoff. The question was will Pereira be in the playoff?
Yeah, and Zalatoris, the previous hole, had a similar shot. He didn't go in the water, but his ball or his drive kind of landed in that right side of the fairway, which was covered by trees, and had to play a similar come around, which he did fairly well. But I just watching that drive, I remember saying, I was watching with my old man, and I said to him, like, what the hell is he rushing for? Like, it just seemed like he put the ball on the ground and just smacked it. Like he wanted to, I don't know if nerves were starting to get to him and he just wanted to get out there, but he said he'd even think of the water apparently after, and that's exactly where it went. It was just a weird shot. Even when I think his first putt, it looked like he just rushed it and blew it by the hole. So nerves are probably starting to get the better
of
him.
For sure.
Yeah.
Of course they are going to be. He knew what the situation was getting to that 18th tee. I mean, the broadcast didn't even have the shot tracer. So when he took this weird swing, I was like, oh my God, did he hit it so far right that the shot tracer couldn't even pick it up? But then you finally see it roll in the water. I mean, I was pulling for Thomas at the time. I had some money on him. So I was jacked at that point, but it was great. But let's move to the playoff. So you get Zalatoris and Thomas going to a playoff. I love the three-hole aggregate playoff. It should be mandatory for all majors. Maybe not the the little ones, you know, the John Deere Classics and that stuff. But the majors, three holes, I like it.
Now, wasn't the Masters previously a three-hole playoff? I felt like the year Mike Weir won, he was in a three-hole playoff with Rocco Mediate.
Ugh, I'm not 100% sure on that. I mean, they might have played three holes because they tied.
Right.
Yeah, because I know, I remember he won it on the 10th hole, which is usually not the first playoff hole at Augusta. But
PGA's three and U.S. Open, you have to play a full 18 the next day.
I think they got rid of that.
Are you sure?
For TV reasons. I'm not 100% sure.
Because nobody wants to watch it?
Yeah, who wants to watch on a Monday?
Full 18? You know?
It was great. And Thomas played, I mean, at that point, he knew he had it. He's like, I got back in this, luckily. He missed that putt on 18 to get the minus six, and he thought he wasn't going to get in. Zalatoris, who is the worst putter on the tour, he is awful to watch. He's got yips. His putter's just circling around as he's backing and pulling through it. He makes a clutch putt on 18 just to get in that playoff. Thomas would have won it outright. That would have been nuts. But Thomas, he said afterwards, he was on the range, and if you notice, he hit the three wood cutter that he was going to have to hit on 17 because he knew that was the hole in the playoffs. And sure enough, he drilled it, gave it the perfect club twirl, and that ball landed right on the green, something that I was talking about earlier that I definitely can't do with a three wood. Stuck it on there, two putt for birdie. At that point, it was his tournament. Zalatoris just couldn't get anything going in the playoff.
Yeah, they both started off birdie, but then the execution, as you talked about from Thomas on the second hole, that, you know, that was the difference right there. And then they go to 18 to finish off. And by that point, it was over, right? So, I mean, a deserved victory for him was his first win in 14 months. He's been around the leaderboard for a while and always has mentioned, but good to see him get another major. And maybe this will propel him forward in some of the other events coming up. But a couple other guys just wanted to touch on. Not going to talk about Matsuyama. Jeez.
We'll get to that later.
Tough day for him. Tough weekend, I guess. But Rory comes out again, shoots 65 on Thursday, 5 under club, you know, in the lead. Follows it up with 71-74 to put him back to even heading into Sunday. So more of the same from him.
But no, a little bit different because usually at majors, he's brutal on the first day and then has these amazing Saturday and Sundays to get him a T10. This one, when he had that great round on Thursday, I was like, shit, he's going to walk away with this tournament. But it was the opposite. He struggled a little bit and they couldn't get going. Like I mentioned on Sunday, I felt like maybe he would have been the guy to jump up.
Well, yeah, another guy, I mean, Bubba Watson shoots 72, 2 over on Thursday, comes out and shoots 63, a 7 under on Saturday, and then disappears Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, and Rahm, same thing, had a rough 76 on Saturday. I mean, that's the thing, right? A lot of these guys were affected by the weather, and one guy it affected a great deal was Tiger, who, you know, unfortunately had to withdraw after Saturday.
Yeah, I'm unsure about Tiger is what I would say. He did not look good. Like, even just watching him in some of the practice rounds on the Monday and Tuesday, his limp is so obvious. Like, he must be in so much pain. Let's remember, he almost lost that leg. And he just didn't look like he was striking the ball well at all. And in this course, it needed to be long shots. You needed to get some distance, and he couldn't get that power off of his back leg. And I felt for him. He looked like he struggled. I mean, hats off him just to even make the cut. But I knew Saturday when I saw that 79, I was like, oh, I think old Tiger's done here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we think back to post Masters, he made it seem like the next tournament he was going to play was the Open Championship, which is in July. So the fact that a month later he plays, you know, I think was pretty surprising. And unfortunately, the injury is still there. Obviously, it's something he's going to be working through. And maybe now, you know, maybe we won't see him now until the Open Championship in July.
I would agree with that one, Mike. I don't think we're going to see him at the U.S. Open now, which is too bad. And I think he would have rather played that one than this one. But a couple things I noted for this tournament, Mike. I don't know if you noticed, but the caddies were allowed to use range finders.
Yeah, I did notice that. I didn't first think time. Much of it. Yeah.
And from what I've heard, the caddies are still, you know, it was really windy, so you're having to adjust, you know, your yardage. You're going to have to figure out if you're in the rough or fairway, all those things factored in. But I thought it was cool. Probably sped things up a little bit because that course got a little tangled around 6 and 7 where they're kind of hitting over each other. And the other weird thing I noticed was Fitzpatrick in the last group, really good golfer, English guy. He chips cross-handed.
Yes.
I've never seen that before.
I noticed that too. I noticed that. And I was like, it threw me off yesterday.
It threw me off too.
I never noticed it until yesterday when I saw it. And I'm like, what the hell is he doing? You know, he's a right-handed golfer. So typically for the people who don't golf out there, when you grip the club, much like a baseball bat, you know, hockey stick, your forward hand, your right hand, if you're right-handed, is lower than your left. He places his left hand lower on the club. And I've seen that putting. You know, a lot of people have very different grips and ways to putt. I've never seen that chipping before.
And he had the golf glove still on, so his left hand was lower with the glove on it. It looked so weird.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I'm glad you remembered that.
Maybe I got to try it. Yeah, he's a PGA player. He played pretty good. Maybe I'll try it. We'll see.
The other thing, though, how about some of the names that missed the cut?
Oh.
DJ. We'll have to get to that. Scheffler.
That'll be in our pick'em because we did not do very well in our golf
pick'em. We can skim over that.
Now, the second round of the NHL playoffs is at the midway point, and the series are starting to heat up, and that will be our T2. Connor McDavid has taken over the playoffs and is leading the Oilers over the Flames, while both Colorado and Carolina hold 2-1 leads in their respective series. But it is the Tampa Bay Lightning who are proving why they are back-to-back cup champs with a dominant performance over the Panthers. Mike, should we just give Tampa another boat parade right now?
I wouldn't go that far. I do think, you know, I mean, by the time this podcast is out, they've probably already swept Florida. Play Monday night, up 3-0. Vasilevsky, you know, he is playing really well. They've won 4-1, 2-1, 5-1. He's stopping everything. Florida's power play, I couldn't believe this, Stark, in the playoffs going into game 4 is 1-for-28. This was the President's Cup winners of the regular season, and the power play has just went stone cold. 3 goals in 3 games. Okay, they're playing the defending champs, but I think we all kind of expected maybe a little more of Florida. But taking nothing away, Tampa Bay proving why they've won 2 cups in a row and have a very good chance to be going for the three-peat, think.
Yeah. So I'll be honest. I hate the second round of the NHL playoffs. Hate it. Maybe it's because my favorite team hasn't been there in a long time, so I haven't been able to enjoy the second round. But I'm kind of just getting, you know, it's like getting dumped and then 2 weeks later, you don't want to go to a party. You just kind of want to stay home. So it's been tough for me to watch, especially watching Tampa Bay just dominate the Panthers. And you're right, Mike. They are playing. It was like they won that series against the Leafs and something clicked where they're like, man, we are really good. Let's just steamroll the rest of this playoffs. And I have a fear that they're gonna walk to the cup. And it's not just their goal scoring, which has found its groove. Stamkos playing great hockey, really proving why he's an elite player after some struggles. He's had tons of injuries. And, you know, let's remember the first cup, he didn't even really play.
Right.
So this one, he's really trying to prove himself. But on top of all of that, Vasilevsky is just so good. He's only given up 1 goal in each of the first 3 games. He's found his groove. The team knows how to play in front of them, keeping shots to the outside, and they're just that good. I really do believe that they are the team to beat right now. Taking nothing away from Colorado, who obviously was a big favorite. But Florida just seems like they're missing out on maybe some of that experience. We know they're really good, but we also know that Huberto, Barkov, haven't had too much playoff success of anything. They've really tried to build that team, bringing in Claude Giroux. It just hasn't worked in this series. Now, could they come back down from 3-0? Yes, because they are that offensively talented, but I just don't see it happening. Tampa Bay, way too good.
No, and they won their first series. You know, they erased that deficit, first one since 93 that they hadn't done. So maybe it's a progression thing. They kind of knocked over that first pillar. Now they got to go for the next one next year. But keeping in the East, Carolina was up 2-0. Rangers grabbed a big win on Sunday. Shesterkin, 43 saves on Sunday. Difference maker there, kind of like Vasilevsky. You know, I think he's going to be key if the Rangers are going to keep this going. Interesting, Carolina in this playoff, 6-0 at home, 0-4 on the road. So
storm surge.
Rangers are probably going to be tying this up, taking a 2-2 to Carolina if things continue as they are. But, you know, Rangers are a good team. Carolina's a good team. This one feels like it could go the distance, and Tampa's probably very happy at that.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be ecstatic because these two teams are just going to keep going shot for shot. For me, I think I like the Rangers still.
Yep.
I know I picked them when we talked about it, and Shesterkin's the difference. Carolina's got Ranta in net. Doesn't sound like Freddie Anderson's coming back. What a sad story for this guy. Just his playoff struggles, injury struggles now. Finally gets on a team that wins a division, looking for a long playoff run, and he can't even be there to go forward. I like the Rangers to power through this. They got that win at home. If they can tie the series up back on home and go into Carolina with some momentum, I could see them getting this done in six and winning four in a row, essentially. I don't think they're good. Neither of these teams are good as Tampa Bay, so it doesn't matter too much. I want to see exciting hockey. Panarin can get hot. Kreider seems to keep scoring, had a big goal as well. Rangers are a physical team, and I think it's going to take a toll on Carolina.
And they've been here before, right? Down 3-1 to the Penguins, came back and won the series. So I agree with you, Rangers. Rangers-Tampa Bay could be a, you know, an interesting East final if that's how things shake out. Colorado, St. Louis. I went bold with my St. Louis pick. I think, you know, the chances of that amounting to anything went possibly down the drain with Binnington now out. And
what did you think? Did you think that was a cheap shot?
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, Colorado's side is maybe Kadri was checked into Binnington. St. Louis thinks it was different. I really don't know.
I loved how the broadcast went right to the Nick Kiprios hit on Grant Fuhr, where he just dove into him in the playoffs for the Leafs against the Blues as well, actually. I don't think so. I think it's a lot different. You're right. The defenseman kind of guided him in there. Puck was kind of there. So I know Kadri is a bit of a pest and obviously has a history of some questionable plays, especially in playoffs. But I don't think by any means was he trying to hurt him. But you're right. I think that just sinks St. Louis. Now, let's remember Husso did start the playoffs for St. Louis as their number one goalie. But I don't know if they can get through this Colorado team who's just stacked with a powerhouse offense. And their defense is playing so good on the back end with Devontaeves and Cal Makar. They're so strong and move the puck well. A fast team. Whereas St. Louis really trying to slow it down with some of their veterans. I don't think they can get that done either. I like Colorado to really finish this one off quick and try to heal up any injuries they might have.
Yep. And then best for last, Battle of Alberta.
Oh, jinx. Love it. I think it's been must-watch TV, even though the game two started at 11 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, too late for this guy. But it was good. I was able to catch game three in its entirety here on Sunday night. I tell you what, man, Calgary came out flat in the game. I think Edmonton outshot them 21-7 in the first period. And then, you know, it was 0-0. Calgary held on, but then Edmonton scored, what, 4 goals in the second. And that was pretty much it. You know, you talked about McDavid and 9 points through 3 games in this series, leads going into this week with 23 points in the playoffs. Draisaitl right behind him. Evander Kane had a hat trick. They're clicking. Mike Smith's been playing well after the baseball game in game 1, 9-6. You know, things have kind of tightened up a bit, but good series. It's been exciting, and Edmonton is playing really well.
Yeah, it's a contrast of two different styles of play that we kind of talked about, the run-and-gun Oilers, the kind of shutter-down old-school Daryl Sutter defensive squad in Calgary. And then game one was 9-6.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. The comeback to tie it up was outstanding, but Calgary pulls through to get the win. Both of these buildings have been just rocking, and that's great to see. And that's something that Canadian hockey teams haven't had very much of in the last few years, obviously because of the pandemic and also because we haven't had runs like this for some of these teams. And McDavid has now taken over the series. He is clearly the best player in the world, the best player in these playoffs. He's making all the players around him even better. How happy does Evander Kane have to be right now from where he was 6 or 7 months ago in disputes with teams and not knowing if he was even going to be allowed to play and some of the trouble he was getting in? He's just skating hard to the net and the puck is ending up on his stick and he's putting it backhand, top shelf, every single time. Two hat tricks already in the playoffs. Last Oiler to do that, I think, was Mark Messier. He had three in a playoff. So he's playing great. He's going to get another hat trick in these playoffs for sure because he's playing with McDavid, and McDavid is taking over the game. Now, yes, I'm still worried about Mike Smith. Can he close out the series? Can he take this team to a Stanley Cup final? I don't know. He's going to have more games like game one where, oops, that one went in. Oops, that one went in. Next thing you know, it's 3-0, 10 minutes into the first. So Calgary's got to get to him early. They got to get lots of pucks on net and lots of traffic. And they got to tie this series up to go back. They can't go down 3-1 because I think McDavid might take it over. And it gives them too much wiggle room, even with Smith. So it's going to be a great finish this series. It's going to be a long one, I believe. It's going to be a battle. We know that there's some bad blood now after the Lucic kind of hit on Smith, and I wonder if there'll be any sort of retaliation or physical play right at the start, but both these teams are going to want to win, and it's been fun to watch. Well, the Lightning show what experience can do in the NHL. In the NBA, the Warriors are proving they are back this season, and that will be our T3. Steph Curry and company are now up 3-0 on the Mavs with a chance to close out the series and move on to the finals for the first time since 2019. The Warriors look great, while the Heat and Celtics are in an epic battle that's destined to go 7 games. Mike, this Warriors team means business this year, but do either of the East teams even have a chance?
I think so. Obviously, they have a lot more work to do. We'll touch on the Warriors quickly first, because I think that series is over.
Agreed.
You know, we had talked about it. You know, we exchanged texts with a good buddy of ours Sunday night saying, if Warriors win game three, it's probably maybe Dallas can do something to grab game four here, but Golden State's going to advance. They're just too powerful. Potentially back to the first final since 2019, as you mentioned, where they had 5 straight appearances, 3 championships. They look like they are heading that way. Miami and Boston, it kind of reminds me of Leafs and Lightning, the first few games of the series, where one team dominates 2 of the first 4 and the other team takes the other 2. You know, Miami winning games 1 and game 3. They took a commanding lead in game 3. I think they were up 26 points at one point, and then Boston got it down to a point. I agree with you. I think this one could go the distance. And, you know, I kind of said Miami, Lowry comes back, made a difference for them. He's been playing hurt throughout the playoffs. But if Boston can do what they've done, especially against Milwaukee, they have a really good chance at getting back here.
Yeah, Butler gets hurt there. Lowry comes back. Butler gets hurt. He's out. Hopefully he's okay. Hurt his knee a bit. If both those guys are in the lineup for Miami, I think that they're the better team that could possibly run it through and maybe challenge the Warriors. I think it'd be great to see Lowry go against Golden State again and see if he has any more of those heroics to get the Heat to a championship. But Celtics, I still like them. They're gritty, man. They're gritty. Not big, big superstar names, but they play well as a team. They're never really out of the game. You notice, even when they're down 15 points, you feel like they could go on a run and get there. Playing in Boston in front of that crowd, they always have that extra juice that maybe can get them through it. So that's a series. Like, this is a series. They're battling. They might go the distance. It's going to be fun to watch. You're right. It's going to be back and forth. I would not be surprised if the Celtics win the next game to make it 2-2 and see if they can turn the tide and start winning back-to-back games as opposed to everyone take a turn here. The Warriors, it's over. I was shocked on Sunday when I looked and saw that the Mavs were favorite just because they were at home. Luka's great. Yeah, he's good, but he looks like he's out of shape, just playing rec basketball. And I don't know if he's much of a leader and how the, him and his teammates get along, but the Warriors just dominated them. Curry's playing great. Thompson, awesome. I mean, those two have to be so happy and so motivated to prove to the world that, hey, we had our good run there, 4 or 5 years, a good run. But it's not over because the Raptors beat us and KD left and Thompson missed 2 years. We're back and we could do this for another 3, 4, 5 years and it starts this year. That's what it looks like for them. That's the message they're sending. And I love Andrew Wiggins on this team. He was never going to be the superstar on a team that takes a team all the way to the championship. That's not his personality. That's not his game. But he fits in great as the 3-4 guy on this Warriors team, and I want to see him play well. I'm happy for him. Last time we talked, it was doom and gloom for the Blue Jays, but let's remember it's a long season, and that will be our T4. The Jays found ways to win this week with a 4-2 record over the Reds and Mariners to put them in a wild card spot. The bats have still not caught fire, but pitching has been key for them during their struggles. Mike, is this team moving in the right direction, or is a shakeup still needed?
The roof is open.
Yep.
The crowds are plentiful and boisterous. Look, I mean, heading into this week, they're 22-19. At this point last year, they were 23-18 at what is considered to be the quarter mark of the season. So in good shape. I think there are still some question marks. You know, we've talked about this for the past couple of weeks, that the offense was playing well in April, kind of hit a bit of a lull here in May, but even in April, they were not at their full potential. Pitching has been what has taken this team through. And if we just look at last week, you know, they take 2 of 3 from Seattle, 2 of 3 from the Reds, teams they should be beating. They take 4 of 6. That's good. Kikuchi pitched well Monday and Sunday. Barrios, Ryu, Manoa. I mean, even Gausman maybe didn't have his best outing last week, but he took the loss. But, you know, pitching has been holding this thing together, and another good week from the starters, even the bullpen. You know, Adam Simber's done a great job in relief, I felt. And Santiago Espinal, 15-game hit streak. So that's something to keep our eyes on, and hopefully that keeps going. But, you know, back in the win column, 2-series win. And, you know, hopefully the start of things continuing in the right direction.
This has to be a positive. This week has to be something where within the clubhouse, they're saying to each other, hey, guys, we're winning ball games despite our struggles here. We're finding ways to win. And that's what good teams do, because you're not always going to just mash the ball and win 8-3 and find ways to win with home runs and multiple hits on. You're going to have to battle. You're going to have to say, we need to manufacture runs here to win the game. And that's what they did against Cincinnati and Seattle. And it proved that, yeah, we got the big guys. We got Vladdy and Springer that can crush the ball, and, you know, 7 home runs each is not where they thought they would be. But they're still getting hits. They're getting on base, and they're finding ways to make their at-bats valuable for longer in the game to really hurt some of the pitchers they're going up against. They needed to play Seattle and Cincinnati. It did help. Yes. I won't deny that. They had a tough schedule to start, but hopefully they're going on the road now. They can get some momentum. These players can start to find a groove. Maybe one or two of them do get hot. Maybe it's Bo Bichette and Vladdy that start really banging the ball around and go on a run here. They'll need it. You know, Chapman struggled, you know, lots of strikeouts and can't find ways to get hits. Maybe something clicks for him when he gets on the road here and they get going. But that pitching rotation, which was maybe the question mark if they could still hold it together, they've been great. They have been exactly what this team needed. Because imagine if they didn't have pitching right now, it'd be a storm in Toronto. I mean, Montoya, we talked about it. Yeah, he's keeping his job right now, but he would be gone for sure. And they just got to keep pace, right? The Yankees are going to slow down. These guys are not going to hit the ball all season long like this. And eventually we're going to have to go toe-to-toe with them again in June and July. And that's those games that the Jays are going to need to win. But I like this ball club. I do. And I think that all those high expectations they had at the start of the year, they should still be there. Fans should still be optimistic. They're going to make the playoffs. It's expanded. So that's where they need to be. Because this team will pull together at the time when they need it. And I think a good road trip right here will go a long way.
Yeah, we talked about Bobichet having a better May than he did April. And another solid week for him last week. 7 for 24, which is about a .292 average, roughly. 3 home runs, 7 RBIs over the week. 2 home runs Saturday against the Reds in a, what was it, 3-1 win, I think it was. So, you know, he's been playing well. Springer had one hit in all 6 games, so he's on a little streak of his own. Vladdy, 0 for 11 against Cincinnati, which is a little concerning. Still in a bit of a slump for him. But, I mean, the guys around him are doing enough, and the pitching has held up, so it's not as glaring, if you will.
Right, agreed. And you need guys to step up and get big hits to win games, and we saw Cincinnati do it. Joey Votto, local Toronto kid, gets the game-winning home run on Sunday. Really great to see. I know he's won the Lou Marsh before for the best athlete in Canada, and he's won MVP awards. But he's kind of lost in this country, and a lot of people don't talk about him, and they don't talk about him enough on how great of a baseball player is. I'd vote for him to go into the Hall of Fame when he does retire. I think he's 37, 38 now, keeps himself in really good shape and enjoys playing for Cincinnati, and many times has been asked, do you want to be moved? We're not very good. He's had chances to get out of there, but he's stuck with it. And Cincinnati is kind of lost in the Toronto market. And maybe that's why Joey doesn't get the respect he deserves amongst Canadian athletes and baseball in this country. He plays for a team that's in the National League, so the Blue Jays don't see him very often. He doesn't play against teams that we follow or track, and you don't see a lot of his highlights because his team's brutal, and they've been so for a long time. I think I read he's only played 11 playoff games his entire career, so he hasn't had a chance to really shine and be a top player in Canada, and people haven't been able to really see him, which is sad.
You know, as a Jays fan, it'd be great to see him at it for a run. If, you know, maybe it was the end of his career or something, having that kind of guy on the team, you know, down the stretch, September, October in the playoffs would be a hell of an addition. But, you know, kudos to him for sticking with one team his whole career. That doesn't happen often.
Yeah, and I got a great Joey Votto story for you, Mike. So in 2009, I believe it was, so we're talking 13, 14 years ago, you know, Joey's probably 23, 24. He's playing in the Reds minor league system, but they don't really know what they got, and he doesn't know if he's going to be an everyday Major League Baseball player. He's playing for Team Canada. First time that the World Baseball Classic is held in Toronto. Canada playing in front of home fans. And me and a couple buddies were lucky enough to work for Team Canada in the clubhouse. So our job was, you know, we're picking up the laundry, we're running and doing errands for whatever the guys need to do, and cleaning up the locker at the end of the night and making sure their bats are in the right spot, all that different stuff. Really cool experience. But we would sit in the Blue Jays clubhouse, which was being used by Team Canada, during the games. And we would be able to watch on the TVs kind of in the middle. It's a massive, massive clubhouse, as you can imagine. And a lot of these players on the Canadian team are minor league players. I think we only had 3 or 4 full-time Major League Baseball players on the team. So they were giving Joey a chance to play. But very quiet, very unassuming guy, had talked about how he didn't like the spotlight, and was a quiet guy, and let his baseball do the talking. So they're playing against the United States, and we're underground, but we could hear the 50,000 people roaring up above us as we're watching on TV. and he hits the game-winning home run, or go-ahead home run, I should say, turned out to be the winning one. And the place went nuts. Like, it was shaking our roof as we were sitting in the clubhouse. So we're sitting there, and all of a sudden, Joey walks into the clubhouse just in the corner, taking his batting gloves off, doesn't even really notice us. And he's just looking at the wall, and he takes this deep breath like, that was the biggest moment in my baseball life. And he was alone underground while 50,000 people were cheering him on outside, but he just needed a second to collect his thoughts, and we were watching him. And one of my buddies that was there working with me looked over at him and said, "Hey, Joey, great hit." And at that moment, he caught himself. I was like, "Holy shit, I'm not alone." And he looked over at us and he was just like, "Thanks." And I think back on that moment of, that could have been it. You know, he could have just played minor league baseball, but maybe that was the turning point that got him to this, hopefully, Hall of Fame career. And it was that moment of him by himself thinking, wow, I've really made it here and I've done something and I can play with these elite athletes. It was really cool. Now, football chatter will start heating up over the next few weeks, and that will be our T5. While the XFL lands a big broadcast deal, and so does Tom Brady. Mike, will this be a big year?
Just shifting gears, you know, we haven't really talked much about the USFL. Admittedly, I haven't, beyond week one, I haven't watched any or follow it. So
you were supposed to pick a team for us.
I didn't. And brutal. We'll wait for the XFL. XFL, I think, may have a little more promise with The Rock behind it. You know, they took a little extra time here not to launch and doing it right. Just announced last week a new 5-year broadcast exclusive rights deal with Walt Disney and with ESPN. So that's ABC, FX, ESPN. There'll probably be some streaming stuff on ESPN Plus, which I don't think we get up here in Canada. But, you know, a good deal for the league. They're kicking off February 2023. Haven't announced cities or teams yet, but I think a lot of the successful ones they had in the 2.0 version 2-3 years ago will probably stick around. But, you know, with The Rock, it just seems like anything he does is a success. So I tend to believe that maybe this will be too.
It's entertainment, right? That's what these guys know how to do, is they know how to sell entertaining TV, really. And that's what I believe the XFL will do again, just like they did those many years ago when they brought in so many interesting things that people were like, oh, this is weird, but it's cool to watch and it's football. And people are starving for football. So if they can add a little twist that brings a few of the outside viewers in, I think it's a smart idea on their part.
Yeah, and they've done some partnerships with the NFL as well from a scouting perspective with the PA. So it feels like they're going about things the right way. And, you know, as a football fan, I hope they're successful.
The only problem I'm going to say about these other leagues is you can't really have it be a minor league feeder system because the nature of the sport. It would be great if, you know, some of these guys, the quarterbacks that get drafted, perfect example, your team, Jordan Love. What if they were like, hey, you know what? Aaron Rodgers is going to be our quarterback for the next 3 or 4 years, but we love you. We think you're going to be a great quarterback. We're going to send you down to the Birmingham Barracudas of the XFL. We want you to play 2 seasons down there, be a starter, get some reps. And then, you know, people will watch. The Packers fans would watch those games to be like, hey, let's see how our future quarterback's going to be. Is he going to be good enough to replace Aaron Rodgers? And because they can't do that, because shit, one hit and he could break his ankle or rip up his knee and be done and never even play an NFL game. Now you fast forward 4 or 5 years, whenever Jordan Love is given another chance to play, he hasn't played a competitive game really in years, dating back to his college days. So you can't have this XFL and USFL as a feeder system because of the risk of injury.
Well, then I don't think either league wants to be perceived as a developmental league, right? They want to be their own standalone professional league. Hopefully there are some recognizable names with these leagues, right? I think for a lot of fans, you know, if there's a a recognizable name, it helps draw attention. So it'll be interesting to see. They got, you know, a lot of months ahead to figure it all out, but we'll see what happens. But one guy who doesn't need to worry, not that he ever needed to, about his post-football career, Tom Brady has a 10-year, $375 million deal with Fox Sports to take over as their lead analyst whenever he decides to hang them up. Fox made the announcement.
It's sitting there. It's just waiting.
Yeah, just, hey, when you're ready, this massive $375 million contract is all yours. Looks like Kevin Burkhardt's going to be the new play-by-play guy for Fox Sports after Aikman and Buck went to ESPN. So good for him. I assume Greg Olson will probably be the lead analyst this season until Tom's there. Fox has two of the next three Super Bowls, so maybe if the Bucks get bounced early, he slides in for the playoffs. But, I mean, good for Fox. You know, they lose their top team and they go out and sign the greatest quarterback of all time for his second career.
Yeah, smart. I don't know how great he's going to be on the broadcast, if he's going to be like a Romo, but it'll be interesting. People want to at least watch him and hear what he has to say. I'm sure he can tell some good stories, too, about his Belichick days and all that. But this doesn't happen if he's still playing with Belichick. No way is Bill letting him announce some deal for 2 or 3 years down the road. So I think Tom's loving being in Tampa Bay and doing what he wants. Now, going into the PGA Championship, I was leading our golf pick'em with a score of 85 to 59. And what happened? I took Justin Thomas, who won the tournament, for 10 points. But the rest of my picks, oof, Morikawa, T55, Cantlay, Berger, Johnson, all miss the cut. So good thing I had Thomas for the win. Well, Mike had Matsuyama, T60, Hovland, T41, Lowry, T23, Scheffler missed the cut, and Tiger Woods withdraw. Ooh, too bad, Mike. 0 points for you. I go to leading 95 to 59 going into the Charles Schwab. And Mike, I'm going to even let you have the first pick. I don't even know if it's right or not, but I'm starting to feel bad for you and show a little pity. So go ahead, Mike. You can have the first pick.
Don't give me that. It is my week to pick first. I'm sticking with him. Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, I probably have a bounce back, right? He probably was a little upset at himself not having a good showing in the second major. So what can you do? I'm going to stick with another guy, too. I'm going to stay with Colin Morikawa. Should have a bounce back week.
I'm sticking with a guy I like. I didn't pick him last week, and I'm kicking myself because I've been on him for quite a while. Will Zalatoris.
Billy Zalts. I watched this guy closely this weekend. He's had some struggles. I think he might have even almost lost his PGA Tour card. He only gets exemptioned into certain tournaments now. But he played very well this weekend, and apparently he's found something in his swing that's really turning him in the right direction. I'm going to go with Tommy Fleetwood. Great hair.
Abraham Answer.
Oh. I was watching him closely this weekend, too. He looked like he was playing some pretty good golf, so that's good. A guy I thought would be more involved in major contention this year, it hasn't been. I picked him last week. He needs to start turning around. I'm going with Victor Hovland to finish it out. So that's Scheffler, Zalatoris, and Answer for Mike. I got Morikawa, Fleetwood, and Hovland. We got a great game coming up right after the break, so stick around. We'll be right back. It's time for the greatest game show in sports podcasting history. And as the current champion on Jabo, I will look to defend the belt and stay undefeated in the game of Would You Rather. Are you ready, Mike?
When the hell did you get a title? What are you talking about, champion?
I got a belt now, a Would You Rather belt.
Self-proclaimed champion? You're like Ted DiBiase, self-proclaimed million-dollar champion.
That was a great belt, the million-dollar belt. That was awesome. A great belt. All right, number one, we just mentioned him. Tom Brady signed that monster deal with Fox that kicks in whenever he retires. So if you're Tom Brady, would you rather play this season or call it a day and start your broadcasting career?
I'd keep playing. I mean, he proved last year he's still performing at an elite level. It's good to know that your second career is taken care of. So, you know, go out, play another season, see how you feel, and go from there. I mean, if your skills start to drop a bit or the team isn't as good, you know what you have waiting for you. So keep playing until you know that's it.
Yeah, every former player says to any younger guy, play as long as you can. Because when you're done, you're done. And then you're just sitting around saying, oh, I wish I maybe had one more year in me. So might as well keep playing. He's making good money as a player. He's been successful. He's probably hoping that his team is going to be good this year. But I could see it being a struggle this year and him saying, all right, I'm done. I got all this other stuff off the field that's going to be positive, it's going to be fun, and it's going to keep me busy. I might as well move on as well. So play another year, Tom. We'd love to watch you do it and then go into the booth. We'll watch you do that as well. Number two, there are five current head coaching openings in the NHL, but only three of them are interested in you as the next head coach, Mike. So would you rather take the job in Detroit, Philadelphia, or Winnipeg?
I can't even skate, so I doubt they are, but...
Hey, lots of coaches can't skate. They just stand on the bench and yell out at the practice. You know, lots of guys do that. Ken Hitchcock, very famous for that.
I could do that. I'm going to Detroit Red Wings. $36 million roughly in cap. They have seven picks in the first four rounds of this upcoming draft. Eighth overall this year. Steve Yzerman is the GM. He is responsible for building the Lightning into what they are currently. And they got a solid roster, you know, Sider, Raymond, Edvinson, Kosa, some of the younger guys, Dylan Larkin, Tyler Bertuzzi. There is some questions with goaltending, perhaps, and maybe a couple more defensemen are needed. But I think Detroit is heading in the right direction. I think they got a good group of players, a great GM who has kind of done it before, so to speak. And they have some assets in terms of cap space and a lot of draft picks. So, you know, I think they're a couple players away from really contending for the playoffs, and I like where they are.
I did like Detroit as well, but they might take a little bit longer to get there than the team that I like, which is Philadelphia Flyers. First of all, I'm staying away from Winnipeg. Clearly, there's major issues going on there, and players probably don't like each other, and that's why they're having all of their troubles and drama. So I'm staying away from Winnipeg. I like the Philadelphia Flyers. They were expected to be a playoff team. They thought they had all the right pieces, but they had a lot of injuries. COVID also hit them very hard. Kevin Hayes barely played this year because of injuries, and obviously the death of his brother hurt him as well. But he had a great end to the season, and I look for him to bounce back and be a complete leader. They got a good haul for trading Claude Giroux. Hopefully they can turn that into some successful pieces for next year. And I really like Carter Hart. I think he's going to be an elite goalie in the NHL. He's had his struggles, but he's going to find his game. He's still young here. He's only 23, 24, so he needs a little bit more seasoning, and he's going to be a top goalie. Watch for him to possibly be a top goalie for Team Canada in the future, too. So if I'm a coach, knowing I'm going in with a star player up front that's eager to prove himself and a top goalie, I know I'm already in a good spot to at least compete for a playoff spot in my first year as a coach. So give me the Philadelphia Flyers. Number three, two of the top current players without a major are the 2021 FedEx Cup champion, Patrick Cantlay, and Will Zalatoris, who has two runner-up finishes in majors. Mike, would you rather put your money on Cantlay or Zalatoris to win a major tournament first?
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with Will Zalatoris. You know, I think when you look at the four majors, Masters, he's finished second, solo, a T for six, PGA, last year tied for eighth, second solo this year, U.S. Open, you know, he's been cut twice, but did have a T6 in there. And he really hasn't had a chance here in the Open Championship. Whereas Cantlay, I think his top finish, T9 at the Masters like 4 years ago and the PGA that same year. So Cantlay had a great season. I think he's a great golfer. I just think Zalatoris has been a runner-up twice. He doesn't have a tour win yet, but he has two playoff losses this season. I just think, you know, he's kind of knocking at the door and eventually one of them are going to fall for him. So I'd put my money on Zalatoris doing it before Cantlay.
Zalatoris has such a great swing. Driver, his irons, even around the green, he chips it so well. He is great to see. But man, he cannot putt. It is tough to watch. And I just can't see him winning a big tournament like a major when you can't putt. So he was in a playoff to win a major despite not being able to putt. And I think that might have been his last chance. I can't see him getting to that point again where he's got a chance to win putting like that unless something drastically changes. Patrick Cantlay is the fourth ranked player in the world. He is an elite golfer. He's on the Ryder Cup teams. He's gaining all that experience playing on the international level. He's due. He hasn't had the greatest showings yet in majors, but I could see him getting there. He is too good of a golfer, and he's the complete package. Drives the ball well. Iron play is outstanding. He can chip. He can putt. I think, and not to mention, he is just cool under pressure. So you put him in the final group on a Sunday of a major, and I think he's just going to steamroll right through it, shoot a nice 67, and walk away with whatever trophy it's going to be. I actually think I like Cantlay in the U.S. Open coming up. He hits the ball straight, and he can play well and putt on some of those lightning-fast greens. So I'm going to go with Cantlay, and I'm going to even one-up you, Mike. I think he wins one this year.
He dropped to 6 in the world.
Oh,
still confident
after this weekend?
Now? Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Top 10, better than me. What am I ranked in the world? Look it up. Got to be somewhere in the 17 to 18,000 range.
Yeah.
Number four, would you rather get off to a hot start in the MLB season and coast for the later part of the year or get on a run following the All-Star break going hot into the playoffs?
As I mentioned, a smarter baseball man than me once said, if you're 500 at the All-Star break, you have a chance. Nobody wants to peak in April or May. They're not handing out any awards in the first 2 months of the season. I think if you can keep yourself treading water above water, come the All-Star break and get on a run, maybe add a piece or two at the deadline if needed, or just your guys step up and you kind of catch momentum through August, September, and put yourself in a spot in a good spot, for a playoff spot and get in. That's the desired route, I would say.
Yeah, baseball is such a different beast compared to the rest of sports. Getting hot too early, you could fall apart and be out of the playoff picture completely. So as you said, stay close, stay tight, get hot at late. And now that they have those extra playoff spots, one game play in sometimes, you're going to need to be hot at the end of the season so that you can get in there. And I rather have my pitching going great, lined up properly, and my hitting red hot in August, September. So that way we're peaking at the right time, get hot for a month at the end and win a World Series. Number five, Rich Strike did not run in the Preakness for fear of injury. If you own the horse, would you rather risk it all and go for the Triple Crown or pull him out and start cashing in on the studding?
No, running the risk of injury is not worth it with horses. Unfortunately, you know, they don't have long lives, especially after an injury, as we've seen over the years. And I wouldn't risk the injury, go the other route and bring them out to stud and try and build your fleet, if you will.
We've seen this in basketball with load management. We've seen it in baseball with pulling pitchers after 100 pitches, no matter what inning or what the situation is. And we've seen it in hockey, resting players as well. And now we're seeing it in horse racing. They're resting guys. Why? There's three races a year. You play to win the game, as famously said. You win the first one. You're the only horse, the only one that has a chance at the Triple Crown this year. You're telling me he can't run one more race? If he loses that one, fine. Don't let him run in the Belmont at the end. But you got to go for it. You paid $30,000 for this horse. You've already made tens of millions of dollars already. I mean, let him run the race, unless there was some serious injury where he was hobbling around and couldn't go. But it sounded like they just held him out because they wanted to cash in. Brutal. It just killed the race. I mean, I put it on because I happened to be flipping through and seeing it. But otherwise, this would have been a massive race to see if he could win the second leg. Just sad. All right, last one I got for you, Mike. For you specifically. Would you rather downhill snow ski or... would you rather water ski?
I've downhill skied. I didn't like it. I've not water skied. So I will pick water skiing. I think you can set the tone with the speed of the boat, catch your balance. I'm assuming these things. And you'd be okay. Downhill skiing, if you don't know how to properly weave in and out, you're flying.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm picking water skiing.
Yeah, there's massive injuries on the snow hill every day, and I don't want to be one of those guys. The other thing, too, is snow skiing, you're just like, you know, you're going down, go down, whatever. You're on your own a bit, and then you get to the bottom, and you got to jump on the lift and get all the way back to the top again, and okay. I guess it's for some people, but not for me. Water skiing is where it's at, man. It's nice and sunny out. You're carving through the wake. For me, Mike, I like to drop a ski, do a little slalom, pull behind that boat. It's a good workout for the shoulders and arms. You finish off, have a nice cool beer on the dock. Water skiing is where it's at.
It's a workout? I pick neither.
Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, I had the Panthers in game two over the Lightning, and Florida got stomped. Well, Mike had Matsuyama in the top 10, but finished just a little bit outside at T60. Mike, we are cold, but we don't quit. So give us a winner this week.
There was a zero in the number. Just unfortunately, there was 50 spots after it. Got to go with the chalk pick here. Red Sox are hot right now, and I got to take them. Saturday at home at Fenway, 12:10 start. They're hosting the Baltimore Orioles. I got the Red Sox on the money line.
Oh, yeah, of course you do. Jeez. Just like in golf, when you don't have your swing, you just got to keep it simple. Don't go for the 200-yard carry over the water, cutting to the pin. Lay it up to that 100 yards, then stick it tight for a nice little tap-in. So I'm going with the brutal Cincinnati Reds traveling to Chicago to play a 12:30 game getaway day on Thursday, May 26th. The Cubs will take the win while the Reds are trying to recover from their hangover from the night before as they partied in downtown Wrigleyville. Cubs by a million. Now, we want to hear from you, so make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.